Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's odd to you, friend, it's on the odd to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of April 2018. Hey, everybody. You're wonderful. A masterpiece. Beautifully made. Important to people because you're important to me. You're highly favored by your creator, or that as a god, or by the laws of averages and physics working in tandem, you're thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, are an, well, Easter oddball. And here on this show, you are family, and we are one. Welcome to the Odd the Newfoundland. This is episode 52 of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. I hope your March was just wonderful. I hope it's getting warmer where you are, like it is where I am. You're probably going to notice right off the top of things, guys, I'm not sounding very good, and the reason why is because, well, I have the dreaded man cold. I'm feeling a little snotty, a little sniffly, and I might sound a little strange, but reality is, I'm not crying because I never got anything for Easter, and I'm certainly not crying because I ate too much fish on Good Friday. Guys, I just got a head cold. It's all good. You know what? I just look at the head cold as just another little thing that got in my way this month of trying to get this show out to you guys. But as usual, I fought my best and I made sure it came out on time. You know what? 2 years ago, I had a wonderful guest to the very day. It was April 1st, 2016. His name was Garnett Schulhauser, and I actually got him back today on our show a little later in the show. Hey, disclaimer, of course, remember, folks, the views and opinions expressed by Garnett Schulhauser are those of his own. He is my most controversial guest. And he's a very, very great one at that. I hope you guys enjoy that a little later in the show. I hope your Easter has found you well. I know this month has been kind of rough on me, I'm not going to lie. There's been a lot of stuff going on that kind of resist me, so to speak. But I think Henry Ford said it best. You know, he talked a little tiny bit about how airplanes fly. They fly into the wind and the resistance lifts the rings and yada, yada, yada. I don't know. I'm about two drifts away from not giving two you-know-whats. But I will say this. I'm really glad you downloaded the show. I'm super happy you did, and thank you so much for taking the time. It means the world to me, and don't you guys dare forget to subscribe to the Odd to Newfoundland. Just on Podbean alone, you know, we're getting up there. I'd like to see us get that 1,000 subscriber mark. We're getting pretty close to it, and to be honest, we just surpassed 30,000 downloads there just the other day, and that's just wonderful. I mean, obviously, I got more people listening to my show than that, but it's just on Podbean alone, so that's actually a really, really cool thing. Yeah, it's really, really simple to subscribe to the Odd the Newfoundland. Like, as soon as you open up this show in the Podbean app, which is free, by the way, it's literally just a scroll. Like, you scroll the pages right there. It says subscribe or follow in that case. Another thing, too, is really easy, too, for you guys to leave messages and stuff about your favorite episodes, or maybe some of your not favorite episodes. Maybe you want to have a little say about something you didn't like about the show. I always invite people to, provide, you know, constructive criticism. In fact, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was in the comment thread, and it was John, I'm having trouble hearing you. And, yeah, go figure. It seemed like my microphone wasn't loud enough to pick me up, but it was picking up my guest in that episode. So there you go. It's just a great example that constructive criticism can help me better my show. And, of course, when you guys leave positive comments, it helps other people kind of want to jump in there and check out the show as well. So thank you so much for that. I actually got a couple of things I want to read. You know, if you do give me a shout-out on Twitter, Odd to Newfoundland, that's O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. You can find me on Twitter. If you give me a shout-out on Twitter, I'll usually give you a shout-out back. Same thing with anybody who actually leaves a message on, you know, some of the episodes and stuff like that, too. I'll read it on air. And I'm actually going to read two I got right now. The first one goes out to Durf and Dietz. These guys are from Newfoundland, just like me, just randomly, just messaged me one day, said, "At Odd to Newfoundland, us Newfoundlanders got to stick together." What? Which is the Newfoundland expression, saying hashtag NFLD. And of course, you know, I had to reply right away and say, you know, hey boy, you know, what's your show about? And they very, very cordially said nothing. Nothing at all. Just two best friends doing whatever they feel like. So, you know, they got that Seinfeld vibe going on. And I'm pretty sure they both have man hands. I'm just going to throw it to you guys. Thanks so much for giving me a little rub there on Twitter, you know, saying, sharing a few of my episodes. I really appreciate that. And another fellow Newfoundlander jumped in too. Debbie Wiseman, finally getting to listen. Love hearing you talk about your foster child. I didn't know you were a wrestler. I used to go to those shows. And Debbie, what can I say? You must have really enjoyed last episode. Those are some of the things I did talk about my foster child, who's now home with mom and dad, as well as some of the wrestling I used to do. And speaking of which, this is actually a really big month for wrestling. WrestleMania is coming up a week from today, actually, on the 8th of April. And I may have a special treat out there. I know this is a paranormal podcast, but I may have a little special treat coming this month for people who are fans of professional wrestling. And, you know, it's something different, and it might be coming your way. So keep a little look. There might be a little Easter egg hidden for my subscribers this month. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Coming your way a little later in the month. So there you go, guys. If you can, leave a comment, post, like, share. Just help me get this podcast out there. You know I can't do it without you. Anyway, March was a really freaking weird month. What can I say? It was odd. It was strange. It was a lot of articles from a lot of stuff, man. Like, I'm telling you, I had ABC articles, I had Ultimate Weird articles, I had Reddit, I had all kinds of stuff come in this month. So we're going to go ahead and start off with one that just kind of blew my mind, because it's a very, very popular, well, what people believe is an alien. So let's dive right into this month's paranormal news. Eta, the alien, found to be a human baby with deformities. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, you'll see the picture and be like, oh yeah, I've seen that before. The discovery in 2003 of the tiny mummy named Eta in a leather pouch buried in Chile's Atacama Desert sparked global intrigue. Okay, mummified skeleton believed to be an alien has been found to be a baby with a rare gene mutation. The discovery in 2003 of the tiny mummy named Eta found in a leather pouch buried beneath the church in Chile's Atacama Desert sparked international intrigue. Many at the time believed it to be extraterrestrial due to the large alien-like head and small body. However, scientists have found it was actually a baby girl with a series of rare gene mutations linked to dwarfism, deformities, and apparent premature aging. Researchers said that discovery could lead to treatments for people with bone problems who have been badly broken in their bones. A study published in the journal Genome Research found the child was not aged 6 to 8 as previously thought, but was born prematurely and did not live long. Her deformities had led experts to believe she was 6 years old because of the advanced wear on the bones, which they now believe is because of her deformities. They also found that their very much intact skeleton is not ancient, but probably more than 40 years old. Researchers used DNA extracted from the bone marrow to carry out a whole genome analysis, which found she had a genetic variations that identified her as being from the Andean region inhabited by the Chilean Chileot Indians. The skeleton had also only 10 pairs of ribs compared to the usual 12 pairs, which made it seem even more unusual. The UFO enthusiast, senior author Gary Nolan, professor of microbiology and immunology at Stanford University School of Medicine, said a relatively short list of mutations in genes known previously to be associated with bone development were found in genes related to dwarfism, scoliosis, and musculoskeletal abnormalities. Some were previously known to scientists, but others were not. Researchers said a nearby mine may be the blame for the child's deformities. While we only speculate as to the cause for multiple mutations in Ada's genome, the specimen was found in La Noria, one of Atacama's desert's many abandoned nitrate mining mines, which suggests a possible role for prenatal nitrate exposure leading to DNA damage, the study said. And nitrates? Guess what they're in? Well, I'll give you a clue. You didn't eat a whole lot of them on Friday if you're, you know, Catholic. Yeah, sandwich meat, dude. Sandwich meat. Anyway, there you go. That's a very, very well-known supposed cryptid, that Atta the Skeleton. So it's really something to look up online, actually. You guys should check it out. I think it was well worth a read. A great article that time, actually. And I like that one. So how about some good news? How about some good news? You know, I told you guys last month that I have a new cat, and I'm not going to lie, she's driving me insane. But there's a very famous cat out there right now who is now $700,000 richer thanks to a federal case over identity. And this cat holds a very special place in my heart because I dressed up as this cat for Halloween this year. I'm talking about, yeah, Grumpy Cat. It still won't make her smile, but Grumpy Cat has won some scratch. I should be shot for even reading this article. A California jury gave the furry frown queen more than $700,000 this week in a federal lawsuit over the use of her identity. According to documents obtained by the Washington Post, owner Tabitha Bundensen of Mariston, Arizona, won the lawsuit first filed 3 years ago against the Grenade Beverage Company. She signed on for the cat to endorse a Grumpy Cat Grumpuccino, but the company subsequently used the cat's image to help sell other products, with an 8-person jury on Monday found unauthorized. That'll make you really grumpy. Ironically, while the world-famous feline Grumpy Cat and her valuable brand are most often invoked in a tongue-in-cheek fashion, defendants' despicable misconduct here has actually given Grumpy Cat and her owner something to be grumpy about, the complaint obtained by Washington Post stated. David Janellis, the attorney of Grumpy Cat Limited. Like, this cat has an attorney? Seriously? I want my lawyer right meow. Told Courthouse News the verdict was a complete victory. It might even have been perfect. Grumpy Cat feels vindicated. Grumpy Cat feels vindicated and feels the jury reached a just verdict, he said. Grumpy Cat, whose dwarfism and underbite give her the permanent frown she's famous for, became an online phenomenon and turned merchandising machine after Bunsen first posted pictures of her in 2012. Well, that just made my day. Can you just picture the cat on the phone calling its lawyer? Oh, God. Well, you can't sue Grumpy Cat. I guess you'll lose. But you know what? I might just sue Amazon, because if this happened to me, I would, well, literally just, I don't know, I'd probably pass out. Guys, this is the creepiest thing ever. Amazon Echo users are plagued by a creepy laugh, and this is something that's just been everywhere. The voice-activated home assistant has reportedly been laughing out of the blue for no apparent reason. So picture this, you're sitting at home, no one's there. You're watching a scary show on TV, you're already half freaked out, you go to bed, and all of a sudden you hear play through your freaking, like, Amazon Echo. That's terrifying. The device, which sits in your house and accepts voice commands enabling it to play music, activate lights, read news headlines, and many other functions, is one of several intelligent personal assistants currently vying for dominance alongside Google Home and the Apple HomePod. Recently, users of Amazon Echo have reported hearing the device spontaneously laughing out loud at them, despite not having been instructed to do so via the appropriate voice command. People have since been taken to social media in their droves to upload their own stories and clips of the creepy laughter and to ask if anyone has figured out why it's happening. Now, Amazon itself has weighed in with its own explanations for the phenomenon. In rare circumstances, Alexa can mistakenly hear the phrase "Alexa laugh," the company wrote. We are changing the phrase to "Alexa, can you laugh?" which is less likely to have false positives, and we are disabling the short utterance "Alexa laugh." We are also changing Alexa's response from the simple laughter to "Sure, I can laugh," followed by laughter. Whether this will stop the spontaneous laughter from happening, however, remains to be seen, and that is the reason why I would never buy. Like, that is creepy, man. Like, that, come on, that's just freaking weird. It's freaking weird. You had to pay me a lot of money to buy one of those. Well, what have I told you? In Soviet Russia, we pay you in gold bars for free. A lot of gold bars. Plane in Russia drops 3 tons of gold bars. This is my next story. The bar is worth up to $368 million rained down after the aircraft suffered damage during takeoff on Thursday. The plane, which had been carrying gold and silver bars from a nearby mine, managed to lose up to a third of its 10-ton cargo when the left flap of the plane's cargo hatch tore off unexpectedly. The precious metals ended up strewn all along the runway and across the surrounding area, leading a rush of activity as members of public attempted to track down and collect them. The incident occurred at an airport in the port city of Yakutsk in eastern Siberia. According to reports, the plane's crew managed to land safely and nobody was injured. Airport head Nikolai Misnakhodov also later reported that all 172 bars had been retrieved and were accounted for. An investigation into the cause of the cargo hatch fault is now underway. And this, of course, wow, what a major mess up, dude. Like, even if you got one of those bars, $368 million. Think about that. Like, that is unreal. Oh my God, I wish just one of those bars would just fall on my house and you know, with my luck, it'd probably hit me in the head after the friggin' month I had. Anyway, moving on, try not to be negative. You know, how can I be negative when science is so awesome? Yes, science rules, and guess what? Sometimes science, you know, figures stuff out and it takes a really long time, and yeah. Scientists have yet again discovered a new human organ. The accidental find highlights just how much there is still left to learn about the workings of the human body, which in my opinion is absolute masterpiece. The new organ, which has been christened the interstitium, was discovered quite by accident by researchers who had been conducting routine endoscopies, a procedure that involves sending a small camera down a patient's throat to examine the digestive tract. After examining the bile ducts of several patients using a new laser-based endoscopy procedure, the scientists discovered a strange mesh-like network of fluid-filled tissue. Further tests revealed that the interstitium can actually be found throughout the body. The reason it hadn't been noticed before is because when tissue samples are normally collected, the fluid-filled pockets collapse, creating the illusion of completely solid tissue. Scientists believe that the interstitium acts as a shock absorber for our internal organs and also serves as an internal highway to carry cells, especially white blood cells, around the body. The fixation artifact of collapse has made a fluid-filled tissue type throughout the body appear solid in biopsy slides for decades, and are results correct for this to expand the anatomy of most tissues, said study co-author Neil Theiss of New York's University Department of Pathology. This finding has potential to drive dramatic advances in medicine, including the possibility that direct sampling of the fluid may become a powerful diagnostic tool. So there you go, science, you discovered a new organ that can actually help us, you know, treat us. And reality of it is, man, like, we're still finding organs? Like, we're supposed to know our body better than any other thing on the planet, I would imagine. Anyway, you guys hear about that weird snow? Yeah, strange orange snow, actually. It was falling over Eastern Europe. Ski resorts in several countries were left looking like surface to Mars after a recent fall of orange tin snow. Holidaymakers in Ukraine, Russia, Bulgaria, and Romania took to social media in their droves this week to post photographs of the peculiar, otherworldly landscape. According to experts, the orange snow occurs around once every 5 years when sand, dust, and pollen are stirred up during storms in northern Africa and swept over long distances. As the sand gets lifted to the upper levels of the atmosphere, it gets distributed elsewhere, said Stephen Keats, a weather forecaster at the UK Met's office. Looking at satellite imagery from NASA, it shows a lot of sand and dust in the atmosphere drifting across the Mediterranean. I mean, I look at this orange snow and all I can think about is Buried Treasures ice cream. Oh, man, I love Buried Treasures ice cream. You remember that? Remember those little ice creams and, like, you'd eat the ice cream and then inside it'd be, like, this little caricature and you'd be like, oh, yeah, this is so cool. And then you, like, lose it and never ever remember it again. Yeah, anyway. Guys, all these stories are awesome. We had, Ada the Alien has finally been, well, It's not an alien. Ada the baby, we should call it. The deformed baby. That's actually what that alien carcass was. We had Grumpy Cat, you know, calling in his jury. calling in his lawyer. It's like, I can hear the receptionist now. She picks up the phone. Hello? And there's just heavy purring on the other end. Yes, Mr. Cat, how may I help you? Grumpy Cat got $700,000. Amazon Echo has been freaking everybody out with maniacal laughter. I don't know. Maybe it's like got the Dr. Hammer program going on there. $368 million worth of gold actually fell in Russia. You know, I wish I had been there. Scientists discovered a new organ in the human body. Like, jeez, come on. And orange snow fell once again in Russia. Everything is falling in Russia. Guys, all these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Thanks, John. Welcome to your MUFON Minute for April 2018. I want to start you off with the February stats reported to MUFON. There was a total of 548 reports from all over the world. The US had 362, Canada and the United Kingdom both had 42. Shapes reported by witnesses typically include things like spheres, triangles, circles, discs, star-like objects, cylinders, fireballs, eggs, squares, rectangulars, and so on, a whole assortment. For February 2018, the top three shapes were spherical, with 91 reports, followed by triangular, with 46. There was also a category not applicable, which had 51. Interestingly, there were two reports of cross-like objects, and another two reports of chevrons. Just a reminder to check out the www.moveon.com. There's always news stories, case reports to review, also some pretty sweet MUFON swag. One thing to keep in mind if you were ever on the fence about joining MUFON, there is a lot of content for members only, and members get a subscription to the MUFON Journal. An example of content for March 2018, there was an announcement of a new director of field investigator training. Also, the regular UFO traffic report from around the world. A story called China, SETI, will it make the first contact? Also a story called Close Encounters on the 16th hole. Three men experience the unexplainable. Also, a message from Chris Cogsworth to the members called Realm of Research. A special one-on-one featuring Debbie Ziegelmeyer. And all the latest news, events, and conferences from the world of MUFON. I always love a good UFO report with some alleged military involvement. Roger Marsh reported a story on March 15th about a military helicopter which was reportedly chasing an orange orb. He wrote, a Kansas witness at Lawrence reported watching a military helicopter following a fast-moving orb, according to testimony in case 83535. The witness was inside and heard the sound of a helicopter at around 11:15 p.m. on May 4th, 2017. It sounded very low and powerful, so I figured it had to be military. And I, being a total nerd, had to run out to the parking lot to get a look, the witness stated. By the time I was out my door in the parking lot, I had just enough time to watch a small orange ball of light being chased by what I assumed to be a black helicopter, because of the size and sound, disappear behind the rooftops of the buildings east of me. The witness thought the scene was bizarre because he had had a similar sighting a few months earlier in the same general area, south of Lawrence and not far from Baker Wetlands. The light was small and orange in color, and was about 50 to 100 yards ahead of the helicopter. It made no erratic movements, but was traveling at a fair clip, as the helicopter was tracking it almost the exact speed, and it was moving pretty quickly. The witness was doubtful the object could have been a paper lantern, while the color and the intensity of the light were similar to one. The distance ahead of the helicopter rules out a refueling boom, and I'd give the altitude of the two objects to be between 500 and 1,000 feet AGL, and the speed of both to be about 100 knots at the time I saw them, said the witness. As the nights get shorter and the snow begins to melt, don't forget to take a moment to watch the skies. And who knows, you might see something truly unusual and explainable, and maybe odd. If you do see anything unusual, please report it to www.mufon.com. For all things UFO in Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland and Labrador UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks so much, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.
Thanks so much, Laura. It's good to hear from you again, love. And I certainly appreciate all that you do for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Guys, it's time for Oddities, 10 strange facts that are very true about a very odd world. And, you know, seeing as how it's Easter, we're going to do 10 bizarre Easter traditions from around the world. Let's go to Czech Republic for number 10. You know what American Easters are missing? Assaults and robbery. It's true. Now, to be fair, it isn't actually Easter tradition to mug people and take their money in the Czech Republic, but their tradition certainly wouldn't fly if they tried it out in the United States. In the Czech Republic, it is customary for men to get a special Easter whip that they then use to swat the woman they fancy the most. I mean, it only makes sense. In return for getting whipped by some guy, the woman then gives the man a decorated egg or a handful of money as thanks for getting hit by them. If the men are old enough, they can also receive a shot of whiskey. While this sounds weird, it can be considered offensive if you don't get whipped since it means nobody likes you enough to do it. It's kind of like not, you know, getting any cards on Valentine's Day, only somehow less painful. Of course, the now freshly whipped women can let the guys have all the fun slash abuse. They can't let them have everything. The morning after they're whipped, the women of the Czech Republic go out and dump ice cold water on the men that they fancy. Again, this is all in good fun, and the day usually ends with everybody drunk and soaked. Then I assume everyone gets sick because they were dumping ice water on each other, of course. Guys, It's a weird and wonderful world. And the funny thing is, in Newfoundland, most men get the women, and they wind up the ones whipped. There you go, I said it. Cyprus, number 9. Apparently, Easter isn't much of a holiday as is an excuse for everyone to just beat the crap out of each other and destroy absolutely everything. Take the festivities in Cyprus, for example. They also carry the tradition of painting and hiding aids for the young children to find, but then they follow it up with a rather violent contest for their teenage children. It is a long-standing tradition in Cyprus to have entire neighborhoods of young boys scour the town for scraps of wood to use in a communal bonfire. The neighborhood with the largest fire at the end of the day gets Easter bragging rights for the rest of the year. Did we mention there is also a very limited supply of scrap wood to share among the teenage boys? It isn't uncommon for the police to be called in to break up fights over wood scraps or to help put out of control bonfires out, but at least it is in the name of Easter. Why? I have no idea. Moving on to number 8. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, crazy tradition. Let's take a break from all the fist fights and raging infernos and bring it down to a less crazy level. Easter isn't just about candy and painted eggs, after all. There's also a religious aspect to it all, and Bermuda is keeping the fact alive, albeit in a rather weird way. As a way of symbolizing Christ rising from the grave and ascending to heaven, the people of Bermuda fly kites. See? That's a nice tradition that doesn't kill anybody. Oh, God. But not just any kites. These are special Easter kites that can take weeks for the people to design and create. Once the big day is upon them, the kites are flown high into the sky to symbolize the ascension. At the end of the day, awards are handed out for the best made kites in a multitude of different categories. After the fun and games, the kites are put away or dismantled. Since the whole point of the tradition is to make your own kite, there is no reason to fly it twice. There you go. Going to Florence, Italy. Gotta love Italy. While Bermuda is busy perfecting its ability to make the most extravagant one-time-use-only kites, the people of Florence, Italy are hard at work making Rube Goldberg machines of explosive terror and celebrate Easter with. All good Goldberg machines need some epic origin story, so obviously the one in Florence is started with a holy fire using shards of flint from Christ's supposed burial place, the Holy Sepulchre, as a match. The holy fire is then placed on a candle, which is dragged through the city on a massive cart that stands over 30 feet tall and has been in use for well over 300 years as it reaches its destination. The fire is then carried to the cathedral square by clerics and city officials while the cart is loaded with fireworks. When everything is ready, a fuse is placed on the high altar inside the cathedral with a fake dove tied to the end. The fake dove is then set ablaze by the Cardinal of Florence. As the fuse burns down to the cart in the cathedral square, the bells of Giotto's Campanile ring out to signify that the show is about to start. What follows is 20 minutes of nonstop explosions in the city's cathedral that would make Michael Bay weep with joy. If everything goes according to plan, then the fireworks signify a year of good harvest and successful businesses for the people of the city. A very elaborate way to read your town's horoscope, but hey, it's Easter. Enjoy the show. Let's go to Norway next for number 6. Finally, we're getting the real meaning of Easter. Murder! Yay! In Norway, it is an Easter tradition to sit down with your family and read or watch murder mysteries together, so you can all try to figure out who the killer was, you know, together as a family. It has become such a big thing that many large companies actually go out of their way to prepare for the Easter massacre that the country's citizens all hope for. Major television stations in Norway actually change their schedules so that they only show murder mysteries on Easter. Publishing companies will seek out novels about murder mysteries and actually postpone their release just so they can have them ready to rock on Easter. Milk companies even have special cartons made so people can read mini murder mysteries off the milk labels in the week leading up to Easter. And that, my friend, is very, very odd. Moving on to Denmark, number 5. You know what Easter could use more of? Well, the Halloween. Just think about it. You could wake up in the morning and do a basket of candy. Then you could put on a scary costume and go door to door to get more candy from people you never met. It's a win-win situation, really. And it's exactly what the people of Denmark do with just one little catch. This day of giving is a two-way street. While Denmark's Easter tradition does involve children dressing up as witches and warlocks while going door-to-door for candy, the kids are also expected to give the people something in return. Don't worry, though. It isn't their soul or anything like that. They're just required to give each house they visited a decorated willow branch. That's thanks for the chocolate gifts they've received. These willow branches are believed to bless the owner's house. But now, blessed. How blessed can you really be when witches are throwing sticks at you for candy? Very, very strange. Onward to Finland. Number 4, Finland. We've gone through fistfights, fires, murders, fistfights over fire, women being whipped. I mean, Finland must be tame, right? Something simple? Yeah, they don't. Preferring to do a complete 180 with the most mind-numbingly boring Easter tradition possible. Like, my God. You know how we always compare something dull to watching grass grow? Well, that's exactly what their Easter tradition is. They actually watch grass grow to signify the start of spring. But of course, there is a slight Easter twist to all of this. After the grass has finished growing to maturity, children will decorate it with painted eggs, paper bunnies, to signify a time of fertility in the country. And that sounds more like Easter to me. I don't know about you guys. Let's move on to France. We all know America's pretty crazy with its whole Easter bunny shtick. So how could France possibly out-crazy that? Well, for starters, they could switch the magical rabbit out with something inanimate, then give it the ability to fly across multiple countries. That usually works. What could the people of France possibly be telling their children when Easter morning arrives? Well, it all has to do with a special day called Silent Saturday. On the days leading up to Easter, the churches in France will stop ringing their bells as a sign of remembrance to the passing of Jesus. The explanation told to the children is that bells have stopped ringing because they have actually come out of their towers to fly to Rome to see the Pope. When the bells return to France, they drop colored eggs and bundles of candy for all the children to enjoy. So suck on that, Easter Bunny. You've been replaced by a bell. Don't be so upset and try to butter me up, Poland, because you're number 2. Nearly every country celebrates Easter with some sort of large dinner, and Poland is no exception to this. Of course, they managed to craze it up over there via the centerpiece, something known only as the butter lamb. The lamb, the name, yeah, we all know. The name is no misnomer. A butter lamb is a lamb made entirely out of butter. They're usually crafted by hand, but in the last few decades, lamb molds have come into popular use. Due to their ability to make more realistic-looking lamb for your table. What is the butter lamb used for? Well, it somehow signifies the start of spring and, you know, you eat it. You eat butter that has had hands rubbed all over it to give you the shape of a lamb. Delicious. Good going, Poland. And number 1, drum roll please. Norway 2. The Norway Run. Sorry. We're closed, says Norway. Norway, not content with simply being murder-loving crime solvers, actually have an even crazier tradition than that. Outside of murder mysteries, the country doesn't have a whole lot else to do, so they just, well, shut everything down. The hell with it. For a whole week. We don't mean shut down as in kids stay home from school for a week. No. We mean everything shuts down. You don't go to work. Your kids don't go to school. You don't cash your checks. You don't go to the grocery store to stock up on food. Everything is closed down for nearly the entire week of Easter, with the only exception being the grocery stores opening on the Saturday before. You know, if you need supplies out of that, you're pretty much, well, shit out of luck. Considering all the talk about murder during the week, well, you can see things going pretty quickly, pretty bad quickly. You know, for a man in need of food. Guys, I hope you enjoyed your oddities. The ever-controversial Garnett Schulhauser is coming up next. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Tonight's guest needs no introduction because, well, he holds the distinction as being the only guest to ever appear on my show. Not once, not twice, but thrice. Namaste. Ladies and gentlemen, I have the author of Dancing on a Stamp, Dancing Forever with Spirit, Dance of Heavenly Bliss, and his newly penned Dance of Eternal Rapture, which came out just a little tiny while ago. These nonfiction books are dialogue and subsequent astral adventures with a wise spirit named Albert, who confronted him on the street one day disguised as, get this, a homeless man. Guys, returning to my show, my dear friend, Garnett Schulhauser. Sir, how are you tonight?
Just fine, thanks, Jonathan. How about you?
Oh, wonderful. And it's genuinely great to have you back. And just to throw this out to you guys, there will be a bonus episode coming out for all my subscribers in the coming weeks. This is April 1st. This is the 1st of April. Probably within the next month or so, I'm going to be releasing the Garnett Schulhauser collection, which will be three of our interviews back-to-back for everyone to listen to, because it's an ongoing story. It's a saga. And with that, I'll just let you take it away, Garnett. Brand new book. Let's hear all about it.
Well, it's a sequel to my first three books, Jonathan, and it details more astral adventures with my spirit guide, Albert, my very first book, Dancing on a Stamp, was a dialogue I had with Albert, and then Dancing Forever with Spirit, the second one, and Dance of Heavenly Bliss detailed astral travels I had with Albert. This is now the third set of astral adventures with Albert. It's really quite, I mean, I don't even know where to begin, because he took me to took me to the spirit side again, where I talked to so many wise and famous souls, got their take on what's happening on Earth and some new details about their lives on Earth. I went to other planets in the galaxy, talked to some very interesting fabled creatures on our planet, and it was just a really whale of an adventure. And Albert, as usual, he takes me to places that he wants me to see, to write about, to talk to people. He's got a very set agenda, so I just go along with him, and there's never been a dull moment.
Which I think is so important for all those out there who are wondering. It's been actually 2 years since I had Garnett on the show. This is why I want to re-release the other episodes, because you will get an idea of the other adventures that Albert's been on with Garnett, besides the ones that we're going to highlight tonight, which is Dance of Eternal Rapture. So tell me a little tiny bit about where this book picks up to. I kind of feel like I'm out of the loop, so to speak, a little bit. Where did it start?
Well, excuse me. It starts with a trip back to the spirit side. Albert's taken me there many times before, and I met some very interesting people. And this time, this was no exception. So one of the first people I met on the spirit side and had a conversation with was Muhammad, the guy who founded Islam, which was really quite interesting. I mean, I didn't have any particular affinity for Muhammad. I was raised as a Roman Catholic. So I didn't really know too much about him, but there he was. He turned out to be a very wise, compassionate soul, very kind and gentlemanly. But one of the things that, or a couple of things that he said really surprised me. You know, I asked him about what he thought of the religion that he started, Islam, you know, which is really the second most popular religion on our planet, I think, behind Christianity. And he said, well, you know, there's a lot of good things about Islam, and there's been, you know, the people for the most part, the people who follow Islam are pretty good people, he said. But he was really concerned about two aspects that some people had used Islam as a justification for. The first one, he said, that in some countries, the men use their religion as a justification to abuse and subject women to cruel practices, really, when it comes down to it. As you well know, in some countries they have to wear something on their head, or they have to cover their faces or cover their whole bodies. In a lot of places, the girls can't go to school, maybe not even get a job. And it used to be in Saudi Arabia until recently they couldn't even drive a vehicle. And so he says this is really a subjugation of women, which he never advocated. He never taught that. And it's not in his teachings at all. And he's saying that some people, particularly men, some countries are taking his teachings as an excuse to basically abuse and subjugate women. And he was very upset about this. He said he always believed women were equal and they should be treated with dignity and respect, and there shouldn't be any great division between powers and what one sex can do versus the other. And so he was upset at that. So that was very interesting. The other part that he was really objecting to is that some of the extremists in that religion, as we all well know, use the religion to incite violence, to do terrorist acts, to blow up people, to cause all kinds of violence. And he says, again, he never preached that. He never said that the people who follow his religion should be be hateful and fearful about other people who have different religions. He said he never ever did said that. Certainly didn't incite, want them to have to use violence to sort of to project the religion around the world. And so he was very upset about that. He said those are just two extremes. He just wishes that they could have stayed on the course the way he taught the religion, as opposed to modifying it, tweaking it, and changing it to suit their own needs. And these are in most of those cases, it's all the men doing that, men subjugating women, and men inciting violence and warfare and terrorist acts. And so he was upset about that. But basically, it's sort of like he started the religion. He said, as a human on Earth, when you start something, you never quite know where it's going to unfold, because it takes a life of its own and moves on. And so that's what's happened. So very, very enlightening. He was really, really wishing that his religion could be better in those two aspects. But he realized that there's nothing much he could do about it now.
Yes, it must be very interesting for him to look down and see all these things going on because of something he started. Correct. One of the things we've always said to each other in passing, of course, is Namaste. The God in me recognizes the God in you. And it sounds to me like he recognized the God in himself. But there's also a consequence for what good we do bring sometimes. And, it's very, very insightful to see how man kind of twisted his teachings, which is something that has definitely happened with, you mentioned Christianity, definitely happened with Christianity as well, let me tell you. And, I'll leave it with there. Who else did you come across up there, Garnett?
Well, speaking of Christianity, I had another conversation with Jesus Christ. And I had met him before. He's, of course, a very wise, loving soul, he just exudes wisdom, when you talk to the guy. And so his story, in some ways, similar to Muhammad's, he said, I incarnated on earth, and Jesus was the master soul, incarnated on earth to try to help humanity sort of kick it up a notch in terms of spiritual enlightenment. And we thought that they needed a lot of help. And so he basically went through his life. He did the miracles that he's been attributed to by using his power of very focused thoughts to manipulate matter and energy. And that's how he created his miracles, like walking on water or turning water into wine. So his whole idea was to try to gather his followers, teach his message of love, compassion, forgiveness, and hopefully that would spread. And of course, after he went back up to the spirit side, there was a religion, as we all know, Christianity started that followed him. And he said, just like Muhammad, he said a lot of good things about Christianity, but in many ways, the leaders who followed him have gotten off track. They've fallen off course, and they're sort of setting rules and agendas and dogmas to suit their own needs, their own earthly agendas. And for the most part, those men all the way up through, their whole desire was to control the masses through guilt and fear. With that, he was upset, and he said, he's particularly upset about the guilt factor. He said they basically invented this term called hell, this place, They kept on telling people that if you were bad and you didn't make amends, you'd go to this awful place and burn forever. And he said that causes he said, of course, there is no hell. There is no devil. But he said it caused through the ages a lot of anguish, a lot of sleepless nights from people who feared that they might go to hell or that's one of their loved ones might. And he said that was totally unnecessary. He preached love. He didn't preach fear. And so he really felt badly about how the church had gone off the rails in that aspect. And but he, you know, of course, he knows just like Muhammad did that, you know, once it was created, once he sort of did his teachings and left the planet, then men took over and men have their own agendas. And that's what happened. So, again, very similar sort of story. And he wishes that it hadn't gone that way. But there's nothing much you can do about it now.
Yes, it would seem. You know, it's so interesting to hear that. You know, these entities, these beings, these people who are so influential, myself as a Christian, who've had, you know, experiences with me in my own life, you know, to know that you can go and actually see them. I mean, amazing. And so, but what the heck are they doing up there? What are they doing? Like, to me, we're so caught up in this physical form, what's going on around us all the time. What exactly are they doing up above? Are they just watching?
Yes, they watch and they do things to sort of advance their evolution, but they're very, very evolved, so they don't need to advance very much more. But they're there. I mean, one of their prime functions is to greet people that cross over. You know, at some point, you know, every Christian who believes in Jesus Christ as the, you know, the Son of God, they can all meet him, and then they can see for themselves, and they can. And so that's very comforting to a lot of people. So they spend a lot of time there, and then of course they will tell people, you know, give them the truth about what's, you know, what was right about the Christianity and where they went off track. And so that's really one of their functions. They watch what's going on Earth, and they are basically. I asked Jesus, you know, would you like to come back to Earth and try to, you know, straighten things around? He said, yes, absolutely, but I have to wait for marching orders from the Council of Wise Ones, and so that hasn't happened yet. But he serves to comfort people when they cross over to make sure that they understand that yes, he was a real life person. Now he's on the spirit side, and that they shouldn't believe everything they read or were taught by their Christian ministers on Earth.
That's very, very interesting, and rightfully so. There's so many divisions in Christianity. I mean, it makes perfect sense, but there's still one fundamental thing that kind of runs through most religions, that there was somebody who put this all in spin, one major player, so to speak. And really, I hate to sound vulgar, but just don't be a jerk. It's pretty much the philosophy of most world religions. Just be nice to people. And, you know, how can you argue with love? I can't fight love. So we'll leave it at that, I guess. Garnet, tell me, I know you love this astral projection. I know this is all... So it's definitely a Garnet Schulhauser trademark to go on wild journeys. Tell me about some of the stranger beings you may have come across in this new adventure.
Well, one of the more fascinating trips was, first of all, stranger in terms of being on Earth. I'll tell you about my encounter with a real live mermaid. You know, and she wasn't strange in that sense, but just a fabled sort of creature that a lot of people say. Some people say exists, other people say no, it's just a legend, a fable, you know. But Albert took me to visit her. She was a real live mermaid, and she said that there's a whole race of them, and they can avoid detection because they can stay underwater for like up to 2 hours. They can swim very fast, and they have the ability to read the thoughts of humans. So they can see when people, you know, hear the thoughts of people when they're coming close, so they can avoid them and get away. And, you know, 70% of our planet is covered with oceans, so there's lots of room for them to hide. And so they have been seen occasionally over the ages. I mean, Christopher Columbus claimed that he saw a mermaid when he first journeyed to the New World. There's been other people who've reported it. No one's actually taken a picture or captured one because they're very, very great, very elusive, and very great at getting away from humans. She said that their species originated eons ago when some extraterrestrials crossed a human with a now extinct fish. And so basically she was, you know, as you see in the pictures, she's very much a human from the waist up and a fish from the waist down. But they're mammals, and they feed their young milk, and they, you know, they eat fish and vegetation, and they're very much a mammal, but they have this sort of half fish part of their bodies, which allows them to stay underwater. So, you know, very interesting creature. She says that they would really like to live in peaceful coexistence with humans, but they feel that humans are too abusive and aggressive. And if they ever showed themselves to humans, then they would end up being poked and prodded in a laboratory or put into a circus as a freak show. And so they don't want any of that. And they really hope that someday humans can get their act together and be less abusive and more kind to other creatures on our planet. So very interesting. It's the old saying, where there's smoke, there's usually some fire. So these fables have been around for a long time, legends about mermaids. And I saw for myself, Albert showed me that they actually do exist. And they're very peaceful creatures to communicate by telepathy. And they really want to get along with humans. And they wish that humans would stop polluting the oceans, which is really a concern for them.
That was actually something I was about to mention, because I can't really remember where I heard it to. I'm not sure if I heard it on the news the other day or where it was to, but you know, the amount of garbage in the oceans was grossly underestimated, and we've recently just got new information back from surveyors that we have got one hell of a polluted ocean out there, and it is absolutely loaded with non-biodegradables. And it's a sad state of affairs to know that there's been everything from nuclear leaks into the ocean over the last few years to more and more garbage. We continue to pollute it, but yet we see less and less action being taken to clean it. So, you know, these creatures, they must mention this almost right away to you as being, in a way, Ex-Garnet, you must be really one of the few ambassadors on the planet who has this ability to speak with these creatures. So it must come to you almost as a responsibility to bring this information back to our kind.
No, absolutely. And they are very concerned about the pollution. They have to live with it all the time. We just see it on the news, you know. So they're right in the middle of it. They're very concerned about it, as are the dolphins and the whales and some of the other creatures I've spoken to. That's one of their top priorities is, look, humans, why are you polluting our oceans? You know, it's unacceptable. There's no need for it. And you really need to change your ways. And so – very strong message from them. But interesting, you know, humans on our planet, I mean, we all know sort of what we've been doing in terms of pollution and the violence and so on. One of my interesting trips that Albert took me to was to another planet many light years away that was populated by humans. And they had a very advanced civilization, and they lived in peace and harmony. There was no crime. There was no wars or any other sort of conflicts. Their negative emotions were basically non-existent. And they lived in a very sort of a idyllic society. And what had happened was that a long time ago, their scientists had learned that negative emotions in humans, like anger, fear, hate, greed, that sort of thing, those originated from a defective gene in the human body. And they learned over time through genetic engineering to get rid of that gene, so that basically now they were living in a very peaceful, harmonious society. They didn't abuse, they certainly didn't pollute their planet. They didn't abuse the other creatures. They were very respectful of their environment, and which was really a good thing to see. And one of the interesting things, which is a bit of a sidelight, is that they all of their citizens were in great health, very robust health, because they'd also learned through genetic engineering to get rid of all the diseases that humans are succumbed to, at least on our planet. And one of the interesting things is that they realized a long time ago that humans really enjoy some of the basic things to do in life, one of them which is eating and drinking, you know, enjoying good food. And so they have a huge sort of restaurant bar scene where they all go to, and they don't put on any weight because they have discovered a diet pill that if you take that pill, you can eat as much as you want without gaining any weight or having any adverse, you know, high cholesterol or any of those things to their health. So these people had a very, very good life.
My God, I have to interrupt you right there. I have to interrupt you. You have got to get me this pill right now.
Well, let me tell you, Jonathan, I said to the person I was talking to, I said, can you give me a pill, or can you tell us how to do it? And she said, no, we can't do that. He said, you're going to have to develop that on your own. Because we're humans, they're humans, and they just did it ahead of us.
Rats.
But it would be, just think of all the fun we could have on this planet, if we had that sort of a pill. You know, eat as many double cheeseburgers as you want and never gain an ounce of weight.
Merciful. Oh, my God. I could just see me sitting back with like 6 or 7 quarts of ice cream, you know, sitting on a couch, hanging out with Albert. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of which, Man, we never even, how is Albert doing? Your spirit guide. I never even asked you. I totally forgot.
Well, he's doing fine. I mean, you can't do anything but be fine when you're a spirit on the spirit side. I mean, it's just an amazing place. So there's no, there's no disease, there's no pain, suffering, nothing. Just a wonderful place where there's lots of challenges, lots of room for growth. And Albert's having a great time. He's got a number of channels on Earth that he sends messages through. I'm just one of them. So he takes me on some excursions, and I write about him. He's got many other channels that he sends his messages through, and so he's very active and very happy at doing that. He's really trying to get humanity to get over this rough patch that we're in before we destroy ourselves and all the other life on our planet. And so he's really working hard at it, along with a lot of other spirits on the spirit side who are really trying to help us. They want us to get through this rough patch that we're in. And move up to the next level of spiritual enlightenment. So that's really their goal. Albert couldn't be happier. He's totally delighted in doing what he's doing.
And he must be so proud of you too, of course, Garnet, for all those who don't know, who don't have access to his website, which, by the way, is www.garnetschulhauser.com. Garnet is actually a quantum healing hypnosis technique level 2 practitioner. Okay, so what that means is, well, yeah, he uses past life regression and contact with the client's higher self to reveal the answers sought by clients relating to life purpose, career path, relationships, health issues, phobias. I mean, I've got a horrible phobia of ice. I'll talk to you about that now in a second. Connections to people from past lives and anything else the client is curious about. Did this all come about after you met Albert?
Yeah, it happened when I had finished the manuscript for my fourth book, and I said to Albert, okay, I've done 4 books now. What should I do next? Should I write book 5 or what do you see me doing? He said, yeah, you'll eventually write book 5, but put that on the back burner for now, and I want you to take this QHHT course, which surprised me a bit, but I was familiar with the course because it was started and perfected by Dolores Cannon, who founded my publishing company. So I was very familiar with generally with the course and what it did. So I took the course, took the level 1 course, and I took the level 2 course, and it's been amazing. And I can see why Albert pushed me into taking it, because it's really a great way of meeting people one-on-one and helping them, trying to figure out where their path is in life, what they should be doing. Those are just the major questions that people ask, like, am I in the right job? Should I change jobs? Should I change cities? Should I try to find a new partner? I mean, there's all kinds of those very soul searching questions that they have. We can actually, through those sessions, we can actually get the answers to that, which really helps people. And a number of my clients have said, after the session, their life has changed. They're on a new path and they're very happy. So it's very fulfilling for me to help people in that way.
Interesting stuff. But it just goes to show you that there's more than one way to touch people. And I know that one of Albert's missions for you back in the day, so to speak, was for you to write that book and to get the information out. So it's great to hear he's giving you new tasks to complete. Hey, Garnet?
Yeah, no, I'm always open to new challenges. And Albert, I think he just knew that this would be a good one for me. And I'm glad he did it, because it's just a different it's sort of more one-on-one. When I write a book, I hope that people out there are reading it and it's helping them. But I don't sort of get the same sort of one-on-one feedback as I do in a QHHT session, where the whole thing lasts like 4 to 5 hours. And so we're together quite a while. And I can, it really is nice to see people really thankful about the answers they got, and they sort of charge off, on a new path in life, which is very heartwarming.
Absolutely.
For me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I can't help but think about my mother-in-law odd enough when you say those things, because, I actually had your 2 books, Dancing on a Stamp and Dancing Forever with Spirit. And, of course, the best thing you can ever do with a book that you truly love, then after you're done reading it, is to give it away to somebody who else might like it. And, of course, I gave it to my mother-in-law, and sure enough, she loves this stuff. And she's very much into New Age way of thinking. She's the type of person who loves her essential oils and her salt lamp, and she's into all kinds of stuff. So, I think you found another kindred spirit by accident, which is my mother-in-law, which is pretty cool.
That sounds great. I'm happy to help.
In any way you can. And, I just had to ask you about the, that hypnosis technique. So let's say I came to you, and like one of my phobias I have, okay, is ice. When I was a teenager, and this is something my listeners have never heard before, so here it comes. When I was a teenager, I actually fell on ice and broke my leg in three places. It was a really bad break, and long story short, I was laid up for a very long time. And I've had, like, this fear of ice since then. Like, I cannot put on a pair of skates. What would you do in those situations with a hypnosis technique? Would you be able to actually help me with that phobia?
Yeah, there's a very good chance that we can. And what we do is ask, when we got to the point where you're talking to your higher self, we could ask the higher self to try to release your anxiety, release your fear of ice. And most of the time it'll work. So you could actually get rid of that phobia. And a lot of people can get rid of their phobias. I mean, in your case, your phobia arose from something that happened in your current life. A lot of phobias arise from something that happened in a past life. And so then when the higher self says, okay, well, this arose because of something that happened, you know, two lifetimes ago in Europe in 15th century, and this happened and that caused the phobia. Most of the time when you hear that, there's a release. You sort of recognize, okay, this is why I have this pain in my knee that's inexplicable, and the doctors can't find out why. And it was something that happened to me two lifetimes ago when I was stabbed in the knee with a sword in a battle. Hmm. And so a lot of the phobias originate in past lives. Yours is this life, but I'm sure that, I'm sure we could do something for you, Jonathan. The trouble is we have to do these sessions in person. And so you're going to have to take a vacation in Victoria and then we can get together.
BC's beautiful. What are you talking about? I love it there. Yeah. Bigfoot capital of the world, by the way.
Yeah.
Tell me a little tiny bit.
I'd love to have you come up.
Of course.
Yeah, certainly. Come out for a vacation and we'll show you some of the sights.
One of my dreams is that, you know, if I ever do hit it big, I don't know how it's going to happen. It's not really my objective. And I'll tell you off air about my new career path in life. Anyhow, if I ever do hit a thing and get to that point, one of my dreams is to go and individually visit every one of my guests I've ever had on my show and just hang out with them, even just for an afternoon, because I think that'd be really, really cool. You know what I mean?
It sounds like a great plan. Yeah, and I'd love to hang out with you for an afternoon.
You know, I like to understand that, you know, it took some time for you to get Dancing Eternal Rapture out. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I can see now why. I mean, you were doing other things. You know, there's always a main message in each one of your four books, realistically. And, you know, off the top of my head, I can't really think of the ones in Dancing the Stamp, Dancing Forever in Spirit. I never had a chance to read Heavenly Bliss. You know, if there was one overall message from Dancing Eternal Rapture you could pass on to our listeners right now, what would it probably be? What was probably one of the more important things you feel you kind of got, we'll say, during your travels?
The important message I got from these travels is that, you know, the way humans are running the planet right now, with the abuse and the pollution and the abusing of creatures, doesn't have to be that way, because there are other human civilizations and other planets where they've conquered all that. We can too. We just have to put our minds to it. We have to learn to stifle our negative emotions and to fully embrace love, compassion, and forgiveness. And if we do that, we can end up with a great human civilization like the one I visited, where I mentioned with the diet pill. We can get there. They got there. We can do that. We just have to focus on it and spread the word to, you know, friends, family, coworkers, that we need to really change our ways. And if everyone sort of, you know, pulls their weight and tries to move towards that goal, we can have a much better society on Earth where we won't pollute the waters or the atmosphere or the soil, and where we won't abuse the other animals, and we'll all live in peaceful harmony. That's where we need to go.
And it doesn't matter who the messenger is. If the messenger's love, in my opinion, it will win eventually. I love that. I love that very, very much. You know, one of the things that always intrigued me too, Garnet, and something we've actually talked about every single time I've had you on the show, is the Akashic Records. And that's something that always just blows my mind. The idea that somewhere in this plane or beyond our plane is a place where all the information is being stored, almost like a main computer, so to speak. Tell me a little tiny bit more about those records. Did we have a chance to visit those again since the last time we spoke?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And it was on a couple of different occasions. And it's really quite amazing because, as you say, the Akashic Records contain the records of every life that's ever been lived anywhere in the universe. It's all there. When you're on the spirit side, you can just go in there and you can access it. You can look at all your own previous lives. You can look at somebody else's previous lives. You can look at, you know, you want to solve the mystery of who shot John F. Kennedy. You can go into the Akashic Records and find out who did it. I had very limited chance to actually spend time there because Albert had me on an agenda. So he'd take me there to show me a few things. But I've been there several times, and it's amazing. The good thing is that when I cross over, I can spend as much time as I like, out of curiosity or whatever, you know, looking at past lives of other people. It's really quite amazing. And it, one of the neat things about the Akashic Records is that when you're watching somebody's past life, your own or somebody else's, you can sort of watch it like you're watching a 3D movie, and you can sort of, you know, fast forward, go back, reverse it, stop, move it around any way you want, zone in, zone out. And the other thing that's really amazing is that you actually get to hear the thoughts, feel the emotions of the people in that particular life, like not only your own, but the people that you interact with. So it's really quite an amazing way of exploring. And if you're curious about anybody in history, say on our planet, when you get there, you can just look at the whole thing, like right from as much detail as you want, and you can figure out, get the answers to all the questions you may have had about some of these historical figures. It's really an amazing place.
Absolutely. You know, I hate to say it, but kind of makes me excited to cross over. Don't get me wrong, I'm kind of hung up on being here, but, you know, talking to Garnett Schulhauser makes me feel a little less afraid about maybe going there someday. Garnett, I just love the fact that you're back again on the show. And, you know, it means the world to me and my listeners. I want to thank you so much for being on again. Believe it or not, that's a half hour, dude. That just, poo. There you go. I know when you were practicing law, you might have to keep an eye on the clock, but my God, we just flew through a half hour, like, as fast as you can imagine. Just want to throw that out there to everybody, too. www.garnettschulhauser.com. Guys, please pick up his book, Dancing on a Stamp. Please pick up his book, Dancing Forever with Spirit. Please pick up his book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss. And, of course, when you get those three done, don't be afraid to pick up Dance of Eternal Rapture, his fourth installment. I mean, my goodness. I believe it's Ozark, correct, is your publisher?
Yes.
They must be loving you.
Well, I certainly hope so. Yeah, they are very nice people, and they treat me very well, so I'm very happy to have them as a publisher.
What if they think about a paranormal author? My friend, thanks so much once again for being on my show. And
thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And we will talk again, hopefully, sooner than later. I mean, it's only a matter of time for you to have a fifth book, I guess.
I think so. I think it's on the horizon.
Lorelei knows that. Albert's not going to let you rest. Take care.
Yeah, you take care too, Jonathan.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.